KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. If somebody had told me when the show started that I would at one point be sitting across the table from Kathleen Turner, I'd still be laughing at you.
Why?
Because she's somebody whose work I've loved forever. I've seen her in movies from, first of all, you've had such a great career working with first-time directors, from Lawrence Kasdan in Body Heat, Sofia Coppola in her film and her first film, and now working with
Ann Renton.
In your new film, The Perfect Family. Well, what's your criterion for first-time directors?
Well, a lot of it always starts with the script. If the script isn't there, then I don't care who's directing it, you know. But given the fact that the script will intrigue me and start to, you know, I'll start acting it in my mind. I'll start thinking, okay, how would I do this line, and would this actually be the woman's response? As soon as I realize I'm hooked to that degree, then it comes into play to meet the people and understand their ideas. Now with Larry Kasdan, of course, that was my first film, and I had no idea what I was doing, but it was most hopeful in the fact that it was his first film, you know, also. So I understood that we'd be on this learning trip together.
Right.
You know, that he would be right up against the cinematographer saying, why that lens, why that angle, why that light? And I would be right next to Larry, you know, learning the same thing as we went along. With Sofia, you know, I went out to meet with her on Virgin Suicides, and she had sent me the script. And you have to understand how really extraordinarily brave Sofia was at this point, because she had adapted that Virgin Suicides on spec, on her own.
Novel, yes.
Yeah, and Jeffrey had rejected every other attempt, and she was not commissioned to do this. She did it on her own initiative, on her own caring to. And when she sent me the script, essentially, what she needed was an actress like me who would be able to portray the woman in such a way that it wouldn't be the easy answer, which is the same sort of thing that we need in The Perfect Family. To, you know, if it was so simple that the mother was so difficult or unjust or prejudiced or intolerant, or, you know, if it, then there's no conflict, there's no mystery. And Jeffrey's point in Virgin Suicides was there was no answer to why these children decide that there's no point in continuing their lives. So when I went out to meet with Sofia, you know, I hadn't seen her in a few years, and she's all grown up, you know? She's my little sister in Peggy Sue. So it was like, oh, my God, you're not wearing green. Anyway, but in any case, but she was so clear on how she saw the film and what she thought of the content, you know, that it was like, I went back to the hotel, and, you know, Francis called, and he said, oh, do you think we should? I said, you have to. You have to. So when this script came along, I was intrigued by the character in The Perfect Family, but I thought there was work that needed to be done. So I got Ann on the phone, and we had, I don't know, an hour, 2 hour discussion about the script and where I thought, you know, there were holes or we needed clarification or this sort of thing. And she was very receptive to and said, all right, we're going to go back to work on this. So then I flew out to Los Angeles, because I don't live there. I live in New York, you know, for something else. And it was a good chance to meet Anne. We met for breakfast while I was there. And I liked her. And I thought she was smart. And she had a good sense of balance about her. You know, both, how do you say it? Almost a kind of calmness in her. But that I thought might be really essential for an independent filmmaker, because we shot this in 19 days, you know, with a minimal budget, you can imagine. So you need somebody, you know, who has been quite thoughtful about the entire process and who also isn't going to freak out on you, you know. And I felt it and had those qualities. So after that meeting, then I got the rewrite, and they had really done a terrific job. So I said yes.
Yeah. Well, we should say it's the treatment that voice you're falling in love with across from you right now is Kathleen Turner. She's starring in The Perfect Family. You can also see the show at KCRW.com. I want to ask you, because we're talking about this, I noticed in the credits there are a lot of women. The women, two women wrote the script.
This is a part
producers,
of it.
Yeah. And that must have created the atmosphere on set in some way, did it not?
Well, it certainly was an attractive quality. I mean, I'm never going to take a project of any kind just because women did it, you know. But having women writers, having women producers, having a woman director, every major creative position except cinematographer, Andre, was, you know, was filled by women. Yes, that makes a difference. I want to support women's work when I can. And, you know, not at the cost of the quality of the work in any way, but there was no question of that to me in this project. It was just an added bonus.
There's one scene in this movie that strikes me as being maybe the most powerful thing I've ever seen you do on screen. You play a woman who's just been nominated to be basically Catholic Woman of the Year, and her daughter is a lesbian who's about to give birth and marries her partner in the movie. And there's a scene where a petition is being passed around, basically to keep gay parents from adopting children. And your own daughter is about to give birth. She's just married a couple of scenes earlier. And the regret you have to fight with as that petition is being passed around is, I think, the most amazing thing I've ever seen you do.
Well, thank you. But I think it's a very, very present thing. And in a way, maybe it encapsulates the core conflict. The church, in this case, the Catholic Church, though I don't believe that this is in any way unique to the Catholic Church, I would say that any religion that practices a sort of policy that says this is right and everything else is wrong, you know, would do for the model in this film. But so that moment when she is considering, I think that's a very, very real, constant social pressure prevalent. You know, it's as though, all right, what we might do on our own decision, if no one knew we were making the decision or we weren't in a public arena, as it were, it might be quite different from what you would be held responsible for publicly. You know, and there shouldn't be that conflict. One should be free to act as one would in either sphere. But the truth is, of course, that we don't feel free. We feel pressured.
Because I just found myself wondering if that was one of the scenes that attracted you to doing the film, because it's played slightly for comedy just because of the circumstances.
Because I can't help it. No, I just can't help it. I mean, there's just, life is just too funny to take it so seriously.
But it's also an incredibly real moment. There are a lot of things going on in that particular scene. It seemed to me, watching the movie, that would have been one of the things that made you think, I want to do this.
The real thing that made me want to do this was the sense of the truly strong love and bond within the family, because even though they have such different lifestyles and viewpoints and attitudes toward the church and everything, they show up for dinner every week, you know, as a family. They show up for each other at the hospital or, you know, ultimately at church or whatever. So what really the truth that the strongest element that comes out is the family bond. And I like that. I do believe in that.
But I just found, as I was watching this, just getting ready to do this and watching all these things you've done, the thing what you've done on stage, you play so many women who are enormously willful, and that will is almost kind of self-destructive in some cases. And I wonder how that, because you've done a lot of these parts.
Well, they're not easy going, are they?
No, but you know what I mean? Like that sense of, I mean, in that scene we're talking about, but even going back to Body Heat, you can see the regret when she's sizing up William Hurt, but she's going to do this anyway. I mean, and there's this thing that these women all in some way or another have a kind of mission. And I wonder where that comes from for you.
No matter the cost.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, I don't know. I mean, that leads to saying, Lord, do I believe in like absolutes of some kind? No, I don't think I do. I do believe that certainly when it comes to good drama, yes, there must be. There must be something that the character wants so badly that this is what drives and forces the situation or creates the conflict. And that's good drama. I don't think that's life. You know, I hope, I'm sure, that I don't conduct my own choices that way. Yikes. That's kind of a scary thought here. Now I'm going to have to go home. You know, all right.
The woman I'm scaring sitting across from me is Kathleen Turner. She's starring in The Perfect Family. This is The Treatment, which you can also hear on KCRW.com. But I was even thinking of seeing you, first time I saw you on stage in The Graduate, there's that same kind of, again, this woman's going to keep on this course no matter what mountain she plows into and the doing of it. And you've done this a number of times, then, but you've found different ways of playing these things out. And in almost all these things, again, there's been this kind of, even in Virgin Suicides, this kind of visible moment of, I'm not sure this is right, but this is who I am.
Yeah.
That's how these women kind of define
themselves. There is inevitability in, yeah, to find, you know, I always thought that, I always felt so badly for that woman in Virgin Suicides in particular. I mean, she made me so sad. The constant direction I would get from Sophia was, you know, I'd go to set in the morning and I'd feel like I was one of those sort of inflatable dolls, right? That has a valve. And if you open it, all the air starts to go sink out of this, you know, this doll. And so I would sort of like feel like, okay, everything's leaving. And so every once in a while, Sophia would have to say, Kathleen, I'm sorry. You're coming alive again? I have to go, oh, crap. All right. Yeah. All right. And down, you know. Poor thing. I felt desperately sorry for her.
Well, you know, those choices, or that choice that plays women in this way, it almost sort of seems to me to connect to your kind of the physical power you have as an actress.
Mm.
I mean, I just think in so many of these films, you've got to make an effect kinds of entrances, and that will becomes a sort of way that you embody these characters and make them in some way or another really speak to you must be some part of the way you think about them as characters.
Oh, I think, yeah, I certainly think that although perhaps not even that consciously, I'm not sure that I look for the one element in each woman that would say this is the one thing she has to have. I mean, it's inevitable in the writing if the writing is there. It's inherent. I think of a character like Martha Juno in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Sure.
All right. And when you think about what this woman wanted, she was a woman of great, is a woman of great intelligence and energy and ambition. And in 1962, how does a woman achieve these things? By going usually through her husband. But she is married to a man who's been an associate professor for 19 years, so clearly has no ambition of his own. All right, second path, go through a child, your children, to make them into some, you know, example of your achievement and your accomplishment in life. But Martha has no children. So what is she left with? An empty house and wives' committees at the university. I mean, no wonder she, one, drinks, two, you know, is so destructive and angry and everything, because truly she has no way to get what she needs.
But the way you played her, though, was with a way I'd never really seen before, with a kind of self-awareness of what a tragic figure she was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a kind of a modern take on the character. And I was
not to mention funny.
Well, you mentioned it, but let's say funny.
He's very funny.
You always find the comedy. That's what I said. Even in that awful scene in Perfect Family, you still find the comedy in it. But all these things, I mean, it's still, you know, her will is that since she can't be the person she should be because she's basically a woman of enormous ambition that's been thwarted, she's going to wreck the lives of everybody around her.
Yeah, then she is going to lash out. It's like when I would talk to Bill Irwin played George, and I always thought that a very common mistake in performing that play was that they actually have two such different styles of fighting that George is a rapier, you know. He just goes in. Martha is a club. You know, she just swings blindly, if necessary, and smashes whatever she hits. Do you know, I think of her that way. Oh, dear.
We got to take a break. The woman who just described one of her characters as a pool toy is Kathleen Turner. Her new film is The Perfect Family. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Have you checked out the KCRW iPad app? It's called The Music Mine. Stream music handpicked by our DJs, watch live performances, and find new music. See why iTunes calls it an essential app for music discovery. Download and learn more at kcrw.com/musicmine.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can hear at KCRW.com. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm talking to Kathleen Turner. About her incredible career, her newest film is The Perfect Family. You're talking about regret, I just sort of think about that being key to your film with Frances Coppola, Peggy Sue Got Married. I mean, it's a film where, again, this woman, it's about this thing, what choice do you make, you know? And do you stick with it? Again, you stick with this mission, this thing that you set your life is going to be, or what you do with it. And it's a whole movie that wrestles that entire question. It's the text rather than the subtext.
Well, don't you think that this is essentially good writing, good drama?
You tell me.
I think so. I think that, you know, that it's a constant issue in human lives. What if? What if? What if? What if? What if I had? What if I? And I must confess that very early on, I would say, high school probably for me. I read something, might have been Rousseau. Anyway, where I decided that the one thing in life I was not going to live with was the what if I had. That would be unforgivable. Rather, you know, better to attempt something and fail than to live with the, if I had gone for it, if I had tried that, if I had. So in a way, that forces me into choices that are difficult choices, that are risky, that are very often... See, one of the themes I see in a lot of my work, which, believe me, I think about, is a common thread of anger, you know, of not necessarily, I mean, sometimes it's outrage, sometimes it's...
repressed anger sometimes,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but there is a sense of anger that drives so many of these women that I fear must also apply to me.
Does it, do you think?
Yeah.
In what ways?
Oh, well, I think, you know, I'm angry at injustice. I'm angry at prejudice. I'm angry at unfairness. I believe that there really is truly right and wrong.
But you're talking about anger, and you said fear being something that drives you, though. I want to hear about that fear you're talking about.
The fear of not the fear of not doing something. The fear of you know, the what if I had, fear of that.
Okay.
You know, because then, you know, to try something and not succeed is a resolution. To never attempt something, you know, out of fear, perhaps, or, is unresolved and will, I think, probably haunt me the rest of my days if I were to act on that.
Is this something that maybe drove you in terms of your career, just sort of taking these things that if you gave yourself some time to think about, you might be afraid to take some of these roles?
You betcha. Oh, yeah. No, actually, after the project I'm taking on, I'm doing the one-woman play, Red Hot Patriot, the kick-ass wit of Molly Ivins, at Arena Stage in... late August through the end of October.
We say Molly Ivins was a crusading editorial writer at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, where I worked for a couple of years, and I got to know her in the late 90s. And because the thing about her is she was interesting kind of – when she first met you, she's kind of soft-spoken. And you kind of wonder where this power came from.
Deceptively so,
yes. Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Well, then just read some of her writings, you know. But – and as clear – there is so much material in this piece that I just – I feel must be heard. I mean – but after that, I'm going to take on writing, of directing and starring in a piece. Now, this is the next level of challenge for me.
Okay.
Because, you know, I have directed and enjoyed it tremendously, and obviously I have starred in many, many projects, but I haven't actually done both at the same time before. And this is a play that I'm also helping to restructure, rewrite.
Is it an original piece or is it an older play?
It's called The Killing of Sister George.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Can you believe that? And now we're talking about taking on a lot on that plate. I mean, honey, you know, if I really stopped and thought about that too long,
wow.
Well, but I am going for it.
My fearless guest is Kathleen Turner. She's done a bunch of things. Her most recent project is the film The Perfect Family. This is The Treatment, which you can also hear at KZRW.com. But you're talking about I can still see this quality of will that you're talking about. You have to will yourself past these anxieties and trepidations you have.
Sure.
And
anything that comes through my character choices.
I can't think of a film you've done where it has. I mean, you think about your work with Ken Russell in that character. I mean, there's that kind of thing. But and she knows who she is.
You want to hear something extraordinary?
What?
Is I got a letter. I got an email from Ken a couple months before he died. And saying that he wanted to recreate Alice in Wonderland and would I be his Red Queen? And I thought, oh, my stars and garters, could I go through that again? Because I'm telling you, I mean, I know that Ken said, listen, I have changed over the years, you know, there was a lot of explanation that went along with this proposal. But I remember barely getting out of Crimes of Passion alive. You know, I got home from that, and I slept 22 hours. And my husband said if I'd gone to 24, he was taking me to the hospital, you know.
What made you decide to do that in the first place? So you clearly seen the Ken Russell movie.
Well, you know what I'd done is I've always sort of been driven almost directly in, well, after Body Heat, obviously, there was a lot of pressure to continue that kind of role.
Okay.
Boring. Been there, done that.
Sure.
So what came up, you know, the next choice that attracted me was The Man with Two Brains, which is a spoof of the femme fatale,
that kind of character,
right?
Exactly, yes.
So then comes Romancing the Stone. Can she be, you know, insecure and unsure of herself and unsure of her attractiveness and all that sort of
And that's the character, all these things you're talking about, those fears, she's playing those things out and wrestling with those.
Well, so after Romancing, then came the challenge, the choice, the possibility of doing Crimes of Passion. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, this is raw, this is out there, this is, you know, a woman of you know, designer by day, $50 hooker by night, and Ken Russell and Anthony Perkins. I mean, and there was a lot of pressure on me not to make that choice, you know, people saying, oh, you're going to be America's sweetheart when Romancing comes out. You know, don't
confuse the issue. Yes,
but you see, but my instinct has always been to pretty much go in the opposite direction from the character I played the time before. You know, I have no desire to revisit something I have already explored. I want to go explore something new, and although it would certainly have been safer, and I imagine I would be one heck of a lot richer had I stuck to any category of character, I don't think I could. No, I know I couldn't.
It's The Treatment. My guest, who is one of the most important actresses of her generation, is Kathleen Turner. Her new project is The Perfect Family. You can hear the show at KCRW.com. Well, it's funny you mention this, because one of the things I'm going to ask you about is in this last decade or so, you played a lot of characters wrestling with motherhood in some way or another. And I wonder if, because we go back to Peggy Sue, your daughter hadn't been born at that point yet.
Yeah.
And I wonder how your take on these playing these mothers has changed since you've become a mother.
Wow. Well, I'll certainly in Peggy Sue, I wasn't a mother then. And so a lot of that was, I suppose, derived from my own mother and what I had learned from her and her, you know, her techniques and
was
and
your mom somebody who was kind of happy with her life, or did she express a lot of regrets?
She's an extraordinary woman. My father died when I was very young, when I was 17, and she was left with four children between the ages of 21 and 14, and had not had a career of her own since her marriage in 47. So went back, you know, to school and took a degree as a legal secretary and went back to work. And at that point, of course, my older brother and sister were in college and on their own pretty much. And I was starting university. I was ready to start university. So we were all pretty much on our own. You know, we had scholarships and we had jobs and we just... But at the same time, I mean, now I look back, she's 88 and she lives on her own, has some extraordinary friends, volunteers at the art museum, volunteers at the library, works out of the church. Yeah, and I think, well, heavens to Betsy, I mean, this is... I have an example always of an extraordinarily strong and involved woman. She was of the volunteer, the head of Girl Scouts of Troops on Foreign Soil when we lived overseas, you know, when my father was alive. There is such a tradition in my family of service and of going outside of yourself and your own needs that I couldn't imagine living any other way.
It's fascinating, though, because you talk about this because this altruism in your family and this understanding that there's a world outside of your own house and you have to serve. And you played a lot of women who were enormously selfish and self-involved.
Self-protective, I would think.
You
almost
think so?
Well, I suppose they feel that if they don't get their way, if they don't protect themselves, well, no, I think a lot of it is a sense of protection.
Hmm.
Why? Again, good drama.
Okay.
Yeah, basically.
But I sort of think of that kind of not, I mean, that kind of, unlike this kind of expansive world that you're talking about in your own life, a really kind of monocular view, not really being able to see past a certain point and just...
Well, let us not make the mistake of confusing, you know, my life and my beliefs with...
Oh, no, 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 I'm just saying these women... No, no, I'm saying these women have been so different from that.
You choose the characters because they are driven, you know, to such an extent. And that's the challenge to play, to figure it out, to find out how to do it, and to make you care for them. You see, now that's a real challenge. How do you care for someone like Mrs. Robinson, say, who is so extraordinarily selfish to the point where she doesn't give a damn about her own daughter, you know, or the destruction or damage that she causes her? How do you make her likable or livable? See, that's what I do.
See, this is fascinating.
That's the secret.
Because some of these women you've played have been women who have been sort of constricted by traditional female roles. And you grew up in a house where your mother exploded that.
Yeah.
But still, even to the 21st century, you can still find, unfortunately, women who lead their lives like this.
Very much so.
And it must be kind of fascinating to still play these women and find some way to do the scene you're talking about, to make them feel both contemporary and likable and real at the same
time. Yeah, you still have to care about them. See, if you don't care about them, then it doesn't matter. You know, then The Graduate doesn't work. Then Virginia Woolf doesn't work. Then First in Suicides doesn't work. Then Perfect Family doesn't work. If you simply dismiss this woman as, you know, as being so set in her ways and so bound by her religious beliefs that it's at the cost of her family's happiness, then why go to the movie? Why see it? Why do it? So you have to be able to play her in such a way that you know she's a good woman and you know she doesn't mean harm. She's fighting her own battle. You know,
yeah. I mean, that's something that's been even in something like even in the V.I. Warshawski. There's still that kind of thing of this mission that she's chosen, this thing she's going to do. This kind of cost her personal life,
very much so. Yeah.
And also a character who's kind of wrestling with traditional women's roles versus being a modern woman in her way, taking on the mantle of motherhood.
You're not going to like sum me up now, are you?
I would
something?
Never do like something like
you
that.
Could.
Like not ever.
Like not.
I'm simply asking you questions.
Oh, okay.
Hoping that you will respond. This is the only job I have here.
I am attempting to do so.
I think you're doing more than attempting, but I just find it myself fascinated by your take on so many archetypal feminine roles. And I wonder how much cognition goes into that.
I wonder how much of it is really a desire to justify them, to explain them, and to make them likable.
Have you ever played?
I think people are essentially good. I think that even with all that's going on in our country right now,
sure,
and all of the intolerance and terrible, terrible decrees that are being allowed, I think that given presented basically with a choice, people will always do the right thing. I think Americans will do the right thing. I truly do. I think that we are misled by mass movements, but when it comes to an individual choice,
sure,
I believe that we make the right choices. I think that is inherent in my characters as well.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this. And now she's out of things to say. My guest, who's done like a great job of explaining herself and has been using the table as a percussion instrument,
oh, I should have never given you that weapon.
It's Kathleen Turner. Her newest project is the film A Perfect Family. A recording engineer at Argo Studios in New York is Noriko Okabe. The show is mixed by J.C. Swadek. It is edited by my producer, Jenny Radelet. I'm like Elvis Mitchell.
Yeah.
It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.